Hi, I'm Ahmed Shahabuddin, and you're in the stream. Today, breaking up with the monarchy. We'll look at the reasons why some Caribbean nations want to remove Queen Elizabeth as their head of state. At least six former British colonies in the Caribbean have in recent months declared their intention to abolish the monarchy. Now, this year marks Queen Elizabeth's Platinum Jubilee, or 70th year in power, and royal tours aimed at strengthening ties between the Crown and former British colonies in the Caribbean have appeared to do the exact opposite. With us to discuss these trends, in Kingston, Jamaica, Rosalie Hamilton of Advocates Network Jamaica. That's a group working to seek reparations and remove the monarchy as head of state in the country. In London, Shola Mashogbamimu, a lawyer, activist, and author of the book This Is Why I Resist. And in Barbados, Christina Hines, a senior lecturer at the University of the West Indies. And you, of course, can be part of this conversation live on YouTube. Our stream producers are waiting to include your comments and questions right here directly to our guests. Christina, I want to start by asking you about Barbados. I mean, why take this giant step? And what did they gain? And why this trend, really, across the Caribbean?
I think it is long overdue. So my question would be, why not? In Barbados, this is something that has been discussed since the 1990s. There was a constitutional review commission that broached this. And it should have really happened since 2005, 2006, when a referendum was supposed to have been held. But it never did for political reasons. And I guess this current government took the very bold step of making this a reality. And I think this was quite possible in Barbados because this is one of the few countries in the Commonwealth Caribbean that does not require a referendum to make this change.
And what did they gain in your mind?
I think we gained a lot symbolically. Being there on that night that you're showing now, it was really quite moving. I don't know that we've gained a lot in terms of substance or additional powers because we were already independent. But symbolically, it has been very important to my mind to break this colonial connection.
Right. And when we talk about that colonial connection, I do want to talk more about the legacy of colonialism, not just in Barbados, but across the Caribbean, what it represents, what it means, how it still plays out and actually affects people. With that in mind, Shola, you know, we can't avoid seemingly the elephant in the room. It seems that the Queen's Jubilee kind of exposed a bit of ignorance, if you will, on the monarchy's part. As we outlined, you know, a lot of Caribbean leaders seem to successively call for slavery reparations and independence. You're in England. How is this being discussed there?
So first of all, ignorance, now that's an understatement. I think they, without a doubt, the royal tours to celebrate the Queen's Platinum Jubilee across the Caribbean nations just really demonstrated a royal family, a monarchy that is so out of touch, that is so desperate to stay back in the day, not recognizing that, no, that is not going to continue. And I need you to understand that when we talk about colonialism, when we talk about the Queen as head of state of these countries, following the decolonization of these countries, the reason why the Commonwealth was created was simply to extend the symbolism of the Queen still being head of state, as though the British Empire still exists. Now, I can understand why some countries at the time thought, oh, there'll be some, or they fell for this perceived notion of wealth or connection that could come from being part of the Commonwealth. But the reality is that there is nothing common about the Commonwealth.
Well,
it's steeped in very inequality that these countries, quite frankly, wanted to be decolonized from.
Right. And Rosalie, what do you make of that? I mean, we're seeing some of those images of, you know, the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge on one of their trips. You know, I want to draw your attention before I ask you your thoughts on kind of how Shola framed this on this photo. One of the photos that's been kind of criticized as being tone deaf. You know, they're shaking hands with children through a wire fence. This is in your you know, home country of Jamaica. What does this signify to us about this moment? And why do you think we're seeing this trend emerge?
I think we use the term tone deaf. It was an embarrassing moment because that's not the kind of relationship that we expect in the modern world. We have been independent almost 60 years. In fact, we're celebrating our 60th year in August. And our voice in the Advocates Network was not only to bring that attention to the royals, that we have nothing to celebrate after 70 years with respect to the relationship with Britain and their resistance to accept crimes against humanity that has taken place, and to begin a process of reparatory justice. And that's a loud, loud, loud cry across the region. The countries have set up reparation commissions. The Rastafarian communities for decades have been talking about repatriation. I mean, this is a long-standing issue. And so for them to think that in the context of COVID, I mean, we're still in the throes of a COVID pandemic.
Right.
And that they could come into the region and think that we would simply behave as if we're in the 1950s, we're in the colonial era, and, you know, we accept all this imperial, type behavior and relationship just didn't happen.
Yeah. And go ahead, Shola, please. Yes, go ahead.
To just add to what Rosalie said, is the point that the way some British people perceive what is going on and the way they've interpreted it and the way they talk about it, it's almost as though, how dare you Caribbean nations not be grateful to the Queen, who has been the head and such symbol of statesmanship and be the head of the Commonwealth. And it's clear that their understanding of the Commonwealth is it's an extension of the British Empire.
Yeah.
It is also clear that their understanding is the Queen doesn't need to do anything, just be grateful. And people cannot seem to understand that. I'm sure, without a doubt in my mind, that one of the reasons that the Queen is being removed as head of state is because she's done absolutely nothing for these countries. I mean, how can these countries and the citizens of these countries be her subjects but require a visa to come here?
So,
have to jump through hoops to come to this country or to...
You raise some really important questions, and it makes one wonder, you know, if there's really an awareness or a consciousness of the perception of this relationship, who's benefiting, who's not. One person in the United Kingdom who sent us a video comment, Emily Marshall, has an interesting take about what the monarchy's role should be in all of this at this point. Take a listen.
In recent months, six Caribbean nations have declared their intent on removing the Queen as the head of state. They've been inspired to do so by Barbados, and the recent royal visit to the Caribbean by Kate and William did little to improve the image of the monarchy abroad. There's little that the British monarchy can do about this situation other than to help facilitate the process to make it as smooth as possible. It's clear that several of these nations feel that the link with the British monarchy is something which is outdated and also links them strongly to the colonial past, which they now wish to be untethered from.
Christina, is there an awareness? I mean, when you hear that comment and some of what's been said already in the show, I mean, is there an awareness of the role of kind of colonialism and kind of the harm that it caused, not just historically, but how that continues to play out today?
I don't think there is sufficient awareness, definitely outside of the Caribbean, perhaps also inside of the Caribbean. So if you consider the fact that we are a region of developing countries, this is no accident. This has to do with the way in which we were located as sites of extraction in systems of empire. We had everything extracted, labor, human labor, populations were terminated in this process. So this was a very damaging and harmful process in which everything that we did in the region was really externally oriented towards serving empire. And we do not gain sufficient credit in the Caribbean for having built Britain so that it can be called Great Britain on the basis of exploitation, to the point where we heard about the, you know, the Queen and what the Queen can do. I think Shola mentioned what the Queen can, I don't know what the Queen can do for Barbados, for Jamaica, for even Britain. What does the Queen actually do? I mean, these roles are very symbolic.
Right.
So in terms of what the British monarchy is actually doing to elevate the living conditions of people across the region and even in Britain is, you know, up for debate. I don't think that there's a whole lot that is done apart from, you know, having this thing that is nice. We have a queen, right?
And I see, Shola, you want to jump in there. She was cheering, essentially a cheerleader as you were speaking.
Absolutely.
And I appreciate that energy, Shola. I do want to quickly ask you, though, before I come to you, because, you know, you used an interesting and I think a very critical word, extract, you know, this extractive sort of history, if you will, extracting sugar, forbidding other businesses from, you know, competing on the ground. Obviously, the economic consequences of white supremacy, of colonialism, of whatever you want to call it, Shola, how does that still factor into this decision? And what I mean by that is, what can reparative justice actually look like? Is it realistic?
It is absolutely realistic. First of all, please understand that the extraction and exploitation of the Caribbean countries is exactly what they did with colonized African nations. And I mean, to Christina's point, this is why in Great Britain today, or let's just say Britain, in Britain today, you'll find that the conversation is still around, oh, if it wasn't for us, this small island, none of you would be, without recognizing that if it was not for us, the Black nations and the Black people on whose shoulders, whose blood and whose sweat your economy was built on, you would not be great and you would have nothing. But let me quickly touch on this point about what the Queen can do. If the Queen really wants to leave a legacy that is substantive, her legacy is not being the head of the Commonwealth, because she was only head of the Commonwealth to carry on this symbolism of, oh, there's still some kind of empire. Her legacy would be to really address the issue of truth, right? Which is what the Caribbean nations want. They want reconciliation and they want justice. And you know what truth starts with? An apology, right?
Rosalie.
And then you go on to reconciliation. That means both sides talking about how this is going to be resolved and acknowledging the evil
and,
that was
and, done.
And then
it's a good point. We can't talk about reparations without an apology or at least an acknowledgement of the history and that relationship. We have a lot of people, Rosalie, in our YouTube chat chiming in. This seems like a conversation a lot of people are quite passionate about. We have one comment I'm going to read to you. This is quite interesting. From Bongani Moyo saying, one can't be blind to the fact that the empire hasn't paid back its dues. There is no need for an absent head of state who will not listen to the cries of reparations and repatriation. There's a lot of different comments. I'm going to leave them for now because, Rosalie, I want to hear from you on this notion. A lot of people say it's too late. You know, it's too long ago. So much has changed. In fact, the government has responded formally, I've heard and read, you know, kind of deflecting, saying, let us focus on the present and the future. A lot of people talk about slave owners being paid as, you know, being paid by the government as recently as 2015. Is that true? And could you just deconstruct that for us? Why is that an argument for reparations?
All right, so let's start with it's too late. You know, the UN has recognized what has happened as crimes against humanity. And there's no limitation as to when we address those crimes. So that's the first point that needs to be made. With respect to the idea that these crimes have been committed and in spite of a reparation plan that has been on the table for some time in the region, the CARICOM 10-point plan that has laid out an approach to reparations in spite of all of the advocacy around this issue. There has been silence with respect to taking this step. And I think the voices of Caribbean people will only get louder. It's not, I think it's an important thing to remember about us. Ever since this process started on the continent of Africa, we have been resisting. You know, we've resisted, we fought battles on the continent, on the transatlantic journey, there was resistance. And for the 400 years on the plantation, there's been resistance. So this resistance struggle is not new. It takes a different form in different generations, but it's one story that we need to settle this matter. We have to begin a process of lifting our people up and ending the colonial arrangement.
And for as much
could
as we talk, yes, please. Let's go, Christina.
I just wanted to say, though, that as much as this was a long time ago, the wealth continues to exist. It persists in specific families. We can even see some of the political leadership, former in Britain and perhaps present as well, having benefited from this legacy of persons being paid out for freeing slaves, right? Their property. These are human beings. So this wealth continues to exist in the financial system, in the banking sector, in some universities. So as much as this was a long time ago, the legacy of the wealth that was created persists and exists, and the impoverishment that was created also persists.
Yeah, and you know, when
I could add to Christina's point, the reason there was no visit by the second royal visit to Grenada is that they were able to link the ownership of over 500 enslaved Africans by the Bank of England. And that was revealed only recently. In fact, that awareness of this history is growing. Yes, in fact, right up to 2015, the Bank of England continued to pay reparations to the enslavers.
And
it's unacceptable that in 2022, our claim, the descendants of those who have been enslaved, have been ignored.
Right, I want to come to you, Shola, but before I do, I want to play you a video that we saw. It's quite shocking to me, at least. The Prime Minister of Antigua and Barbuda, Gaston Browne, asking Prince Edward and Sophie on a trip that they took, of course, to use their influence in the royal family to achieve reparatory justice for his country and the people. His response says a lot. Take a listen.
Because the reality is we have been really left bereft of important institutions such as universities and good medical facilities. I mean, we have been able to build capacity. But again, we have to acknowledge the fact that we have been left behind as a result of the situation associated with colonialism and slavery, and that there's some need for some reparations to help us to build capacity so that we can advance at a faster rate.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Thank you for those remarks. I wasn't keeping notes, so I'm not going to give you a complete riposte. But thank you for your welcome today. And it's a great pleasure to be back in Antigua.
So Shola, he wasn't keeping notes. I would imagine suggests that he's not going to address that issue or use his influence, as a member of the royal family. What's been the response there in the UK from the royal family, from the monarchy, and also just citizens?
The caucasity of Prince Edward, is why we still resist right now. And the response from whether it's the British government, the royal family, or sections of the British public, it's quite frankly reflected in his mannerism and in what he said, i.e. we don't need to take you seriously. And people need to understand, please stop saying this happened a long time ago. If it happened a long time ago, I'm sorry, why is there still racial discrimination between black and white nations? Why is there still racial discrimination, steep inequality between black and white people? Why is there still undeniable, visible, absolute the wrong kind of evil that you can even start to talk about that happens to black people till today. The reason why a lot of, the British family and the government don't want to address this issue is because it's steeped in systemic racism. That's the bottom line.
Shola, I want to challenge you just to explain to our viewers. I mean, we all are familiar with racism and at this point, we're all familiar with how systemically and kind of entrenched and enshrined racism is. But what is this about borrowing money, the UK government, after abolishing slavery, to issue government bonds, and that the last of some of those payments to the families or descendants of slave owners was at 2015? Why is this a relevant point?
Oh, it is a relevant point. It is a relevant point because it goes to the substance of their commitment to upholding white supremacy. It goes to the substance of their commitment to seeing black people as property. By the time when they paid these slave owners, it was to be seen to be doing the right thing, right?
Yeah.
But as you can see, and history has shown us, all they did, and I keep telling people this, please, when people keep saying, oh, the British came and they ended slavery, I go, no, let me tell you what they did. They went from slavery of millions of people, individual people, to enslaving entire nations of millions of people, because that's what colonialism was.
So Shola, what I have is in the YouTube chat box, we have a comment from Bongani Moyo saying, generational wealth is something that most black people in the Caribbean can never benefit from. A fund for future generations perhaps can ease this hurt. With that in mind, Rosalie, I want to kind of ask you, are there things that the Jamaican people maybe are only learning now in its entirety that is helping to push this? Because obviously it's challenging to be completely independent. Some people in our YouTube chat asking, for example, King Kurtzig saying, if these countries leave the Commonwealth, will they not lose their aid from the UK when natural disasters happen? So Shola reacting, Rosalie, is that true? Rosalie?
You know,
why is that so laughable?
Well, you know,
go ahead, Rosalie.
I don't want to go on. I think this issue of aid is something else. It's a whole nother conversation.
Okay.
The issue is the reparatory arrangements given and history. Here's the thing to remember with respect to aid. There's a lot of countries in the world that have never enslaved us and colonized us who are providing aid. So we can put that in perspective. Right? We're talking about a process that continues today through institutions and decisions that are perpetuated by many of us who simply walked into the shoes of these colonial enslavers after the colonial process had ended. Now, we still have to grapple with it. So there's twofold types of changes and interventions that's necessary. One is the historical past that speaks to the assets that we've accumulated. Some of us have and some of us have not.
Right.
Some got land, some did not. Some have better education, some did not.
And
then there's the perpetuation of these institutional arrangements and decisions that continue to today.
Yeah.
And we have to tackle both issues.
And I now want to go to Christina, because I want you to tackle a comment that we have from Richard Fitzwilliams. He sent us this about kind of the relevancy of the monarchy amidst all of this, you know, after the Black Lives Matter movement, a lot of conversation, public discourse about colonization, what it is, how it still affects entire populations today. Take a listen.
The Queen's legacy will firstly be that of someone who is totally dedicated to the job, has handled it absolutely brilliantly over the years, is the world's best known and most travelled head of state, considering that there are ups and downs in every institution at the moment. Even in, though it is the year of the Queen's Platinum Jubilee, it's a very difficult period for the monarchy. But on the other hand, it's long-lasting and it adapts and it's shown an ability to reinvent itself.
I found it very obfuscating, but I didn't understand. But what do you make of that kind of argument there, Christina?
I think that argument is just a way of justifying an institution that exists that is not relevant and that is also not willing to reckon with its past.
Can writing historical wrongs change its relevancy or the future of the British monarchy? Or do you think it's a lost cause at this point?
I think it is an irrelevant institution. I truly believe this, and not just for the Caribbean, not just for Africa, for India, but for Britain itself. It is an institution that no longer serves anyone. The only people that it really served were those within the British monarchy. Inside of Britain itself, it is the Prime Minister and the Cabinet that make the decisions about what happens in that country. And this is an institution that is striving for relevance in a time when it is increasingly irrelevant. And we see this if we look at, I don't want to so much talk about the Caribbean, I want Britain to talk about itself as well. So what is it that you are hanging on to and holding on to all of these people on this balcony? You know, what is it that they are offering you? And the last thing I want to say, though, about the Commonwealth is that these countries remain in the Commonwealth. The Commonwealth is a club, right?
I gotta cut you off, unfortunately, because it's all the time we have for this conversation. Ladies, I want to thank you for joining us. See you all next time. Stay tuned here at Al Jazeera.